This is Remote Ruby.
Have you any remote idea to the meaning of the word?
What's up?
Hey, what's going on?
Living the dream. What about y'all?
I always live the dream. I live at the beach.
We're going to the beach. We're going out in your neighborhood this coming week. So, yeah, I will get to experience that beach of yours.
Yes, enjoy it. And don't take up too much of it because it's mine.
We went to Amelia Island week before last. And I struggle to like be a beach person. My favorite time of the day is like 4 o'clock on. The sun's like, it's starting to set and there's less people on the beach. Like that's my dream.
Socially distanced beaches.
I hate sand. I think that's my real problem.
I hate sand and I guess I hate the sun. So
it's fair.
Fair enough. How's your new house?
It's cool. We came home from said vacation and we saw a bunch of like mouse droppings, and Beckett picked up the rug and like a ton of them fell on the ground. He goes, "Mom, these aren't raisins." And Shannon was like, "Those are mouse droppings." And I was just sitting on the chair trying to pretend I didn't realize any of this was happening, even though it was like 5 feet from me. And then I noticed there was one by my foot and I stepped on it. And it was not a mouse turd. It was a maggot. And we learned a lot about bugs that night. And we learned that they're attracted to like cloth. So we went around like our living area and we're like Beckett had a shirt on the ground like when we left, and we picked it up and a bunch fell out of that. And like it was just a disgusting experience. So,
man, sounds like you need to catch some bugs.
Yeah,
you know, I have a solution for you, Jason. Actually, dude. I'm just saying that the only way to like really truly get all the bugs out of your house and application is to use honey badger.
Is that so?
That's I'm telling you right now, they've got zero instrumentation, 360 degree coverage of errors, outages, and service degradation. So you can get a honey badger in there to clean up all those bugs. No more raisins, quote unquote. That's gross, gross mental image. But yeah, I'm just saying you can get some honey badger in there, dude.
But how will I know when I set my cron job that checks for bugs in my house? What if it goes down?
Honey badger don't care. Honey badger will check that for you. They got uptime monitoring. They're going to check the cron jobs for you, dude. Honey badger will take care of all of your problems, it sounds like, bug and application related, which I guess could be the same thing. Yeah, dude, it sounds like you need honey badger in your life.
Honey badger, all the things.
Honey badger all day. Get rid of bugs, real and virtual.
So today I think we should just jump right in, if that's cool with y'all.
Yeah, sounds good.
Let's do it.
Today we have Adam Lathan back with us. Adam is creator of Tailwind CSS, and we've talked with him before, but we wanted to bring him back on to kind of just see all the cool things happening in Tailwind. Tailwind has employees now. Tailwind UI is launched. We obviously talk about Tailwind UI a lot on the show. And then also, yeah, we talk a lot about Vue components, and so we just kind of wanted to learn as much as we can. So what better way to do that than to bring Adam on? So Adam, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me again.
So just kind of diving in. So last time you were on, I think Tailwind UI hadn't been released. It was maybe the Refactoring UI book had just come out.
So that's right. It looks like it was like February of 2019 or something that was on.
Wow, it's been a while.
Yeah.
So if you wouldn't mind just updating us on all the cool things happening in Tailwind land.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I think even before, I think like last time I was on, we hadn't even launched Tailwind 1.0 yet, because I think that was like beginning of 2019, although I could be mixing up my years. But I think that was like the next thing that we did after Refactoring UI came out. Yeah, it looks March or April is when we released that. So, yeah, we released Tailwind 1.0 since we last chatted. And then I kind of spent a bunch of time throughout the rest of the year working on like this Tailwind video series that we published. And then Steve and I started working on Tailwind UI, which is like a, we think of it as like an example directory of Tailwind snippets, basically, like designed by Steve and I for all the sorts of kind of stuff you'd need to put together a lot of different sites, like marketing page sections and application UI components and stuff like that. So that was kind of our idea for like, how do we take this open source thing and sort of build some products around it so that we could keep making money to work on the stuff. And we worked on that for basically the last half of the year and put out like an early access release of that in February of this year. And since then, we've been continuing to work on that and working on other stuff and putting that out. You know, it was a really successful launch and it enabled us to sort of start growing the team. So we've hired 3 people full time since then. So there's 5 of us working full time on things right now. And that's enabled us to do like a lot of cool stuff that we couldn't do before. So now the Tailwind like VS Code extension is like Brad, who originally wrote that, works for us now. So he gets to like work on that at work instead of just in his spare time, which is cool. So that's become like an official sort of thing now. Just like today, we're about to release this like new video series of what's new in Tailwind CSS videos that Simon, who works for us, has been working on. So the idea is like every time we put out a new release, we can put out another batch of screencasts to cover all the new features, which is cool to be able to do that in like an official capacity. We put together this new Heroicons icon library and like a whole new website for that. And put that out. We rebuilt the entire Tailwind CSS documentation site in Next.js, which was cool. I don't know. There's like so much stuff that we're doing now. We're working on like a whole new headless UI library for JavaScript components that are very like Tailwind stylable. So Robin, who works with us, is working on that full time, starting with like React and Vue, but we're hoping to sort of expand into other tooling as well. But that's going to make it really easy to build like custom select menus and dropdowns and stuff that are all like just automatically accessible, but still like you can just throw utility classes on all the different pieces of it, style them however you want. So I think that's going to really be awesome because before that, you had to pull in some library that came with all these styles and figure out how to override them. It just never felt like a happy path sort of Tailwind experience. So that's going to be cool. We've also just put out tons of different new Tailwind releases since then too. So we're up to like Tailwind 1.8, and every release lately is coming with some pretty exciting stuff. Like we added CSS grid support, then transitions, and transforms, animation support, gradients, all sorts of cool stuff. So yeah, we're really busy putting out lots of fun open source stuff and continuing to develop Tailwind UI as well. I'm putting out new releases for that like every month. And yeah, so that's the short of it. And I'm happy to dig into anything else that you want to get into.
It's awesome. Is Tailwind UI still considered early access?
Yeah, right now it is, but we're creeping up on that not being the case. Basically, our sort of measuring stick for whether it's early access or not at this point is we want Tailwind UI to be only built using the Tailwind defaults. And we learned while building Tailwind UI that the Tailwind defaults were like not sufficient for building what we wanted to build. So we wrote like this little Tailwind plugin for Tailwind UI that you have to pull in that adds some extra spacing stuff, updates a bunch of the colors because we found that like the Tailwind colors were good, but they weren't quite perfect. There's a lot of situations where you just couldn't find the right shade for a sidebar color or something. So, you know, we had to make a bunch of little tweaks like that, extend things like the top left, bottom right utilities. Originally, we didn't have a lot of those. Now we have a bunch of them. And so we're shipping that plugin, but we don't want to call it done until you can just use it with Tailwind from a CDN, basically. Even though you shouldn't use Tailwind from a CDN because it's 6 gigs of CSS at this point, it feels like. But we want it to just be like, it's the vanilla Tailwind, not like some special version of it, because making it like the special thing is not congruent with our vision for what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be like, it's not supposed to be like this like really opinionated UI library. It's supposed to be like a resource of component patterns for Tailwind that you should be able to just use, assuming that you haven't deviated like crazy from like the defaults. So our sort of measuring stick for whether it's done is whether we can get rid of that plugin. And we can't really get rid of that plugin until we've released Tailwind 2.0. So Tailwind 2.0 becomes this requirement prerequisite for Tailwind UI to sort of be just like at 1.0 itself. So we're working hard at that lately with a kind of an internal goal of getting that out, I guess in like the next like 8 weeks. So mid November, and then hopefully we can get all the Tailwind UI stuff sort of ready to go for Tailwind to be Tailwind 2.0 sort of ready within the couple of weeks following that. And we've got a ton of components to build still to get to our kind of flesh out each category with what we think is a good kind of selection of choices. Yeah. So then hopefully like early December or maybe even end of November, we'll be able to say, yep, this is ready. It's not early access anymore, at least, although we still plan to keep adding stuff to it whenever we have new ideas for sure. And yeah, then we're going to keep pushing forward on a bunch of other stuff. So yeah, I could keep talking forever, but I feel like I don't want to control the conversation. So
no, it's great. I am curious, have you like come across sites in the wild when you're just using the web and you're like, that's Tailwind or that's Tailwind UI?
I have for sure. It happens a lot. So there's not like a ton that like stick out specifically in my mind. The more fun ones are when I discover something's like using Tailwind and I wouldn't have known it was using Tailwind. So like the Diablo 4 website is built with Tailwind and you would never guess that. Or like the Borderlands 3 website is built with Tailwind. So now I'm always looking at gaming company websites to see if they're using Tailwind because it seems to be like appearing there like pretty frequently. I even saw like the new Stephen Hawking website is built with Tailwind, like the official one. And it like doesn't look like Tailwind at all, right? It's like this black, spacey, sort of elegant look. So it's pretty cool when we can see like examples of stuff that kind of proves that Tailwind does what we set out to do, which is like something that lets you build like any website faster, not something that lets you build like a Tailwind site faster.
That rules. So Chris, Andrew, any Tailwind specific questions before I deviate us?
I was just going to say, if you want examples of Tailwind sites, just check Product Hunt because usually on any given day, like at least half of them are using Tailwind UI.
Nice.
So Purple has definitely made a big entrance on the Product Hunt websites.
Oh man. I think we're going to change that default color for Tailwind UI 1.0 too, just really throw a curveball in people's faces. We never expected people to just say, oh, well, I want my site to be purple because they use purple. We sort of expected people to kind of change it, but no one does, of course. So yeah, what can you do?
You can set it up to do a random color for every user.
I know. I thought about that. Yeah. Or even we just thought about making every example a different color. So like you could never just put two together and have it work. You'd have to like, okay, I'm going to make it my brand color because otherwise it's going to be inconsistent. But yeah, originally we wanted to just make the default color for everything just be like, not grayscale, but make black like the primary color, you know, like just no color. But we tried that in like the very early sort of previews and a lot of people were like, I don't know where to use color now because I don't know which grays are supposed to be color and which grays are still supposed to be gray. So eventually we just decided, we'll just pick a color. But I almost wish we had picked a color that looked good, but was something people would want to change, like orange or something. Like, you know, no one would have kept it orange, but if we could have made orange look good, people would have at least, it would have communicated that it's like a starting point and not like a finished thing. Cause I think people are a little afraid to change it at this point, but yeah.
I liked that you were talking about how like building Tailwind UI, you realize there's a bunch of little edge cases in the config, the default config that like didn't quite fit. I'm curious to hear what are some of those things that you ran into that maybe surprised you or whatever? Because I think that's always a really good moment where you're like, we've been building this thing and I think it's going in the right direction. But then you have a real thing you have to build with it and you're like, oh, wow, I noticed all these edges that are rough. You know?
The main ones were like, we needed more spacing values. Like when we released the very first version of Tailwind, it only had, I think like 8 sizes, right? So you had like margin 1 through 8 and that only went up to, I guess like 48 pixels, I guess is 8 in Tailwind. And that was completely insufficient. And we bumped that up a lot in Tailwind 1. But then for Tailwind UI, we started finding that even like our smallest unit was like not fine grained enough sometimes, especially when you're trying to like nudge an icon like in a button to just like the right spot. Because icons always have like, most of the time when you're working with a square icon, you're using like this, maybe like a 20 by 20 artboard with an icon in the middle of it. So there's always like a little bit of white space around the icon. So when you put that artboard right to the edge of a button, you get like the button padding plus like the little bit of white space in the icon. And now it looks like there's like an unbalanced amount of padding on the side versus what you get on the other side where the text is. And 4 pixels was like too heavy handed to nudge it over by, but like 1 pixel, which is the absolute smallest you can do in Tailwind, wasn't enough. It was like, 2 pixels really is perfect. What are we going to do? It's like, and eventually we just gave up and we added it. So now you have PL 0.5 instead of just like PL 1. So that was like, okay, we've introduced like a new character into Tailwind class names, which is like the period, because that was never there before. So we had to update our purge CSS extractors and all that stuff for that. So that was like 1. So now we have steps of 0.5 from 0 to 4, I think. So there's 0.5, 1.5, 2.5, and 3.5. Originally, we considered, do we just like really abandon the current system and make it all essentially pixel-based? Like, do we make PL4, PL16? And in some ways, if I could go back in time, I would just do that because it's much easier to like translate something from Figma when the numbers just match. But I think it would be a bad idea to break every bit of HTML every Tailwind user has ever written, basically. So we decided that like the 0.5 thing was the lesser of two evils. And in a way, it sort of works too, because as soon as you start doing like 0.5, you start feeling like you're doing something a little bit, coloring outside of the lines a little bit. So it's sort of like a signal that maybe you're like, if you're doing that, you should have a good reason for it. Like, you can convince yourself, yeah, I know this seems a little bit weird, but whatever. And that's the only time that we ever really use them either, is like really fine grain manipulations, but you're not really thinking about it at the big picture anyways. But we also had to add a bunch of like bigger spacing sizes. I think, I don't know how high it goes now, maybe 96 or something, especially for the marketing stuff where you have like big padding on things a lot of time. We needed to do that. We also found that for like the inset utilities, like literally top left, bottom right stuff, originally we just had, I think, like 0 and auto or something. And my thinking was that usually I would just combine top 0 with like margin top, whatever, and that would compose to let me put something in the right spot. But that didn't totally work all the time. Eventually we've like situations where we really need to be able to do this, either for because of like position sticky stuff that needs to interact with the top property or for other reasons. So we ended up just saying, yeah, let's just extend that to include the whole spacing scale, which was like file size, but whatever. We added like another box shadow, like a really tiny, just 1 pixel outline shadow, because there were situations where we wanted to put like sort of a distinguishing edge around maybe like a drop down, but just using a border looked wrong if the drop down like crossed over. Like, we have some layouts where there's like a dark section and a light section right underneath it. If you open the drop down and half the drop down is on a black background and half of it is on a light background, if you just have a solid color border, it looks weird. It looks like the drop down has a border that's lighter than the background behind it when it's on a dark background, which when the whole thing is just on that dark background looks okay. But when it crosses like over a seam, it looked really weird. And we realized that the only way to make it look right is to use like a semi-transparent black so that it goes a little bit darker on the light background, but basically isn't perceivable on the dark background. And that's what looked the most natural. So we added like an extra shadow for that. We added an extra border radius in between the default and large. So it used to just be like 2 pixels, 4 pixels, 8 pixels. Now we have 2, 4, 6, 8. And because we really don't want to like introduce backward breaking changes, it's tricky because those were named like rounded SM, rounded, and rounded LG. So what's like the thing that goes between rounded and rounded LG? So we just settled on rounded MD, which is weird, but you learn it and it's fine. And it felt like better than breaking everyone's sights again. I'm trying to think like what else we added. I think we added a couple extra font sizes because for the marketing stuff, especially, we wanted some really big fonts. And even to this day, I feel like we could even go bigger. If you look at some of the trends these days, like the Vercel homepage is like 600 pixel font and the Hero, yeah, like that's super in. And we're also reworking all the colors again, because even the Tailwind UI colors we found were not, the indigo was perfect because that was the one we were using for everything, but the other colors were not as useful. We tried to do the whole like perceptually uniform thing where the idea is that indigo 600 and yellow 600 should both like have the same perceived brightness. So you could put white text on either of them and it would have the same approximate contrast. But when you do that, like there's only two yellows in the whole yellow palette. The rest is brown and just useless because yellow is like a lighter color than indigo. It's just, that's just what yellow is. It's lighter. So a lot of color palettes try to resist that. And we've tried that, but it just was useless. So we just have decided to embrace the fact that yellow is lighter than blue. So it will be lighter than blue. That's part of what makes yellow yellow is that it's light. So we reworked that whole palette again, even since Tailwind UI, and we're pretty happy with it now. And we have some ideas for like do some interesting stuff with that, where basically we want to like start encouraging people to customize the colors more. And we think that one of the biggest obstacles is just the fact that people don't feel confident in their ability to sort of like create those 9 or 10 shades themselves and feeling like they're really good. But we don't want to just like bloat Tailwind up with tons of different colors either. So what we did is we designed like a much more comprehensive color palette. So instead of like just green, then blue, then indigo or whatever, there's like lime green, then emerald, then light blue, then cyan, then blue, then indigo, then violet, then purple. There's 24 or something now, but we don't ship them all like on by default because that would increase the file size like to a ridiculous point. And you would never use all those colors in the same app either, right? Is the other sort of argument for it. But the idea is now we're just going to ship with an export inside of Tailwind, where in your config, you can just say like const colors equals require tailwindcss/colors. And that has all those colors there. And then you can just pull out the ones that you want for your palette. So you can say like in your palette, like red is our rose color and like blue is cyan and green is emerald. So you don't have to refer to them as like the fancier names that we're using to sort of differentiate them in like the bigger picture. And you can sort of alias them to sort of simple names, but you can piece it together yourself. And then on top of that, we're working on like another project, which we haven't started building yet, but we'll probably hopefully get it out by the end of the year or early next year, which is going to be like heropalettes.com, which is like our hero patterns and heroicons, sort of all those design resources. So it's going to be like a website that showcases like a bunch of combinations of the different colors. So like here's like a whole color scheme for your app. It's like using emerald and rose and cool gray and whatever. And you can just copy and paste like the JSON for that and stick it in your Tailwind file. And we're probably going to add more colors to that that aren't even in Tailwind. Like a lot of people will do like really like maybe a pastel set of colors that are way less vivid and or a set where the hue rotation within a shade is like really aggressive. Like on the old Stripe color system, for example, their like indigo color was like very purple at the darkest shade and like cyan at the top. And same with the red, it was like orange at the top and pink at the bottom. And so like creating all these sort of different like approaches to the colors that people could sort of pick from and being able to showcase all those in a UI where you can see like a little preview of what an app might look like with that color scheme applied and you can just pick it and then start working with it. I think that'll be like an interesting step in just making Tailwind sites look even less immediately recognizable because I think our colors are the giveaway at this point. So yeah.
Man, I love that. All those color palette websites are like, as someone who's not a designer, I like the color palette I find on there, but I don't really know which color I should apply and which do I use this color on the buttons or the nav bar or the background or whatever. Yeah. And seeing a more practical thing would be amazing. And that's like the reason why you guys are so awesome is that the level of detail going into, look, this shadow doesn't look right on a seam in the background for this drop down. That is a level of detail I won't go into because I'll be like, yeah, I know it doesn't look right, but I'm not a designer and I can't really put my finger on why it doesn't feel right. And like the attention to detail on this stuff is far and above, I think, pretty much anything else out there, which is probably part of the reason why Tailwind is like so popular.
Thanks.
It's hard to... I mean, everything else before that was like Bootstrap, where it's you get some flat buttons, good luck, have fun. And they're not easy to go undo that work. And that seems like a tough thing for most of the approaches in the past. Tailwind UI, did you realize that you were going to run into basically everybody being like, hey, how do we write the JavaScript for these components?
Yeah, I expected that for sure. That was like one of the most stressful problems to try and solve before we released the product. And we wanted to basically do like HTML only with the option to do JavaScript integrations further down the road, because it felt like if we commit to doing that up front, well, that delays the whole project by like another 9 months or something crazy like that, or even longer if we actually want to do it properly, which is sort of the way that we're tackling it now, which is before we can even offer that, we have to build all these open source JavaScript libraries that we can use so that when we give someone like a React version of a dropdown, they're not copying like a 200 line thing with all this complex keyboard navigation stuff. Like, we have to figure out how can we separate the stuff that we want them to copy and be able to tweak from the stuff that they hope to God they never see, because they don't want to accidentally mess something up and break like keyboard navigation because of some rogue keystroke, because they all of a sudden took ownership of all this JavaScript that they wanted tucked away somewhere like safe. So yeah, but we definitely anticipated that people were going to want that, but we thought, you know what, let's just start by building something for the people who want to write JavaScript themselves, knowing that a lot of people are still going to buy it who aren't in that camp. Because I know me personally, I've always preferred like working with something where I could just like write a view component for it and make it work exactly the way I want, instead of having to wrestle with like opinions that I disagreed with or that I wanted to change that were just like so hard-coded in there that you just couldn't untangle it, right? So I think there's a lot of people who bought it that are in that camp and were like, yep, this is exactly what I expected. But probably more people actually would prefer that it just worked without having to write the JavaScript themselves. Because the reality is, like, make a custom select menu in a good way is like a lot of work, 2 weeks of work to do it like in a really bulletproof way, especially if you're trying to test it and stuff like that. Like Robin, who's working on those libraries, he spends about 2 weeks per component. I was like, 2 weeks to build like a really good list box with a nice API, 2 weeks to build a dropdown. And that's because he's writing all these integration tests for everything and like studying the way Aria spec and making sure like all the behaviors are exactly right. And most people are just never going to do that in their day-to-day because they just don't have the margin to even do that if they wanted to. So it's nice to be able to like bear that cross for other people and do all that work. But yeah, getting back to the original question, definitely expected that people would want that. And that's been like one of the hardest things to get the messaging right around. Like originally we shipped with Alpine.js for all the components, because the hardest problem was figuring out how do we show someone something that's interactive, say a little user avatar dropdown thing, and how do we communicate that when it's opening, you should be applying these classes so that it transitions the way that we've sort of designed. And when it's closing, you should be applying these transitions. Or when you hover on something in a select menu, or when you navigate to it using the keyboard, that the background should change. And any sort of like syntax we could invent for describing that looked like harder to comprehend than what it looked like in working Alpine code. So originally we just shipped it with Alpine, but then we found a lot of people who didn't use Alpine were complaining that, oh, I want to use this in React and it's really annoying to convert the Alpine stuff to React. And on top of that, we also didn't want to give this impression that the JavaScript was bulletproof either, because it wasn't. It was just like, it was like demo-ware JavaScript. So when you opened like a modal, for example, and then closed it, it would reopen again 3 seconds later, because that was like the most useful behavior for being able to demo the thing, right? So if you copied it and pasted it into your project, you got a modal that automatically reopened after 3 seconds, like whenever you closed it. So we thought that that would make it clear, like people would just get it that they had to tweak the JavaScript, but a lot of people would just push that stuff into production anyways. You'd have a dropdown that didn't work with the keyboard because, again, we're just trying to build you the styles and the markup. So ultimately, it felt like the only responsible thing to do to avoid sort of encouraging people to ship like not production-ready code to production was to rip that stuff out. And internally now, we still author everything with Alpine, but we have a transformation that takes the Alpine code and turns it into comments that sort of describe the behaviors instead. And no one's really complained anymore. People who want the Alpine will just still go into DevTools and copy and paste it. But it feels like when someone does that, they know that it's like they're sort of voiding their warranty. You know what I mean? And that it's like their thing. So yeah, that's kind of how we solved that for now. But we are going to be adding JavaScript examples as soon as like we get some of these libraries done. And on our calendar, that's like a hopefully something we hope to launch in like February, where you'll be able to go into Tailwind UI and instead of just clicking the code tab and seeing some HTML, you'll be able to click the code tab and see some HTML or click a tab and see the React version or the Vue version and then hopefully other frameworks down the road. And ideally, well, for sure, what those will actually look like is the React one, for example, would just be like import list box from headless UI and you get a bunch of components that you put together, add the classes to them and it just works. So the snippet that you're copying is still just as simple as the pure HTML one, but it actually works now because we've figured out how to sort of cut the right boundary between the styling and markup side of things and like the behavior side of things. So I'm really excited to get that out the door. And I think that will open up Tailwind UI to a much bigger audience of people, like not just the people who want to write all the JavaScript themselves or the people who are willing to endure the pain of writing it themselves when they would prefer not to, or just don't even feel like they're good enough at that sort of work to do it. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens when we're able to get that stuff out.
Yeah, that makes it like a more of a true one-to-one comparison between a bootstrap that ships with components already built for you that mm-hmm. are functional. And then that, I know, has held back a lot of people on Tailwind that I've talked to. Just, yeah, I want to use it, but I can't just throw tabs and modals and stuff in right away.
Yeah.
And that makes it really probably even functionally better because you put more time into the details for some of those components too.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. It's always hard to know like how to even do all this stuff from like a product strategy point of view, because there's a world where it like feels like it makes a lot of sense to sort of take basically what Bootstrap offers and offer like our take on that as just like a free thing, like a Tailwind UI Essentials or Tailwind UI Lite or something. Just not even to like try and eat anyone's lunch or compete necessarily, but more just so that people who want to use Tailwind don't feel like they have to use something else because they don't know how to get the results that they want. But then it's like, are we cannibalizing our own products? If we have 5 people on staff who, you know, need to put food on the table. So it's hard to get all this stuff right. And that's something that we're like working through right now, is how to even best surface Tailwind UI to Tailwind CSS users. Because right now it's just like a little carbon ad looking thing in the docs, which seems to work because lots of people still buy it. And that's literally the only way to learn that it exists. But feels like suboptimal too. So I don't know. It's always hard to find the right balance between thinking about the business and the marketing and also just like getting heads down into engineering. And even with 5 people, it still feels like everyone's wearing so many hats and stuff, but trying to figure it out.
Real quick before we move on, what's your life like during the day now that you've taken on like employees? Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself doing a lot more like business work versus like open source or Tailwind UI work?
It's changed a little bit. So when we first were trying to grow the team, because we were just like so buried with work, I basically didn't have any time to do any engineering because we were hiring, and oh my God, hiring is a lot of work, way more work than I ever thought it would be. Like just job applications and deciding, figuring out like test projects for people and interviewing people and blah, blah, blah. It takes forever. And even just talking about it as business owners, what do we really want out of this? I've changed my mind, or like all these stupid meetings of the minds like happen all the time. But when we first hired people, I definitely felt like it felt like it didn't make my life easier. It just felt like I was just trying to keep on top of making sure people had enough work on their plate that was like thought through, and that they didn't feel like they were twiddling their thumbs because they didn't know what to do next, because me and Steve are the only people at the company, right? So it's not like someone new coming into a company of 25 people where they can just sort of like shadow someone until they sort of kind of get it. They sort of know what the day-to-day looks like. We really just had to make sure that we actually like gave people enough direction, and that felt like a lot of work. And for a long time, like probably a month and a half, like that was all I could think about, was like, holy crap, how am I going to get on top of this stuff and feel like we have time to do stuff? And then I'm not just like constantly trying to plan the next project before someone finishes this one. And a lot of useful conversations with Ryan Singer of Basecamp about this. I like to think I could call him a friend at this point, because we do chat like pretty regularly, but that sounds crazy to me, because like when I first got into programming, he was like one of my biggest heroes, but he has been like super helpful talking about like the Basecamp like shape up methodology. And we basically adopted a version of that that's been working really well. And the secret for me has that I didn't expect. I don't know how familiar you are with like that whole idea, but they work in 6-week cycles with a 2-week cool down, and they figure out all the work up front and then hand off the projects, and the teams just work on them autonomously, right? That's like the big picture version of it. And I always thought that the reason they did 6-week cycles at Basecamp was because that was sort of the lowest common denominator in terms of timeline for any work that they did. It's like some big features just take 6 weeks to do. It doesn't feel like we have projects at our company very often that take that long. They're usually smaller, 1 to 3 week sort of projects. So originally I thought, well, if we want to stay sort of agile and be able to sort of change our mind about things, we should be just planning like the next project so we can always sort of make the right decision at any given time without being like committed to some really long time frame. And I assumed that Basecamp would have done things the same way. But what I learned from Ryan, and that what I eventually tried and realized that life was so much better when we did it this way, is that 6 weeks is actually just like this magic number where it's, if you plan out 6 weeks of work, that takes so much pressure off your shoulders for 6 weeks. The company is figured out for 6 weeks. So you can, as soon as we start a new cycle of work, no one really has questions for me. I don't really have to do any more planning until a week before the next 6 weeks. So once we started doing that, I started having all this time, and I started building out new Tailwind features and releasing new versions of Tailwind every 3 days, doing all sorts of fun stuff like that. And it's like, I don't know, it's been magical planning like for bigger chunks of time. So instead of just planning one project for someone, I'll just see what can I fit into 6 weeks realistically. And usually that's like maybe 1 or 2 projects depending on like the size of them, right? But it's just off my plate. I can just plan in batches. Like I only have to plan 8 times a year for like a couple of days. It's so much easier. And the other nice thing about it has been like it forces me to really prioritize things better, because when you know that you're planning for the next 6 weeks, for example, right now, if we were planning for say like a 6-week cycle that started at the beginning of October, since that's like a week from now, that ends like mid-November. So knowing that the cycle that I'm about to plan takes us to mid-November makes it clear to me what we should work on, because I know there's certain things where if I think, if that's not done by middle of November, like we're behind. So that has to get into this cycle. Whereas if I'm only planning for like the next week, it's like, okay, let's just kind of work on this thing that's not that important, but I know we'll take up a week because I'm like a little too busy to do more planning. And we'll get to the important stuff like maybe 2 weeks from now. But that cycle just repeats itself, and the immediate time blocks keep getting filled with lower priority stuff, and the important stuff keeps getting pushed off because you're not really thinking about like how far it's going to get pushed off. You think it's only going to get pushed off 2 weeks, but it gets pushed off way more. So when you have this like visibility, okay, the next 6 weeks is planned. Well, I'm going to be really disappointed in myself if this project isn't done 6 weeks from now. It makes it in and it gets done. So yeah, basically the short version of that whole story is hiring people was hard and slowed me down a lot and made me feel like I didn't have any time at all. Yeah, but now that we've sort of come up with a good system for kind of scheduling work, I actually feel like I had more time than I did before. And maybe if we had just started working this way, even when it was me and Steve, we would have felt like we were getting a lot more done and having a lot more time for things. But yeah, it actually feels like a lot better than it did before. It feels like I have way more time than I did. And the team that we've built, they're like really incredible, really like super self sort of managing people. Like Brad on our team, I could go like a whole week without even talking to him, not because I don't want to, but because like he just doesn't need anything. And he likes to just get like heads down and bang stuff out. So yeah, it's been fun to figure out what the right balance is in terms of giving people like enough direction that they know what to do, but also enough freedom to come up with their own solutions. And I think we're finding the right balance there. And it's been, yeah, really, really fun and challenging and interesting, but also definitely feel no regrets. Feels like, yep, this is working out, and we're sort of getting what we wanted out of growing the team. It feels like we're just able to ship stuff all the time. So yeah, it's been good.
The rules. I was asking because I don't have any experience like that, but I hear a lot of startup founders talk about how much time they put towards the business and less time towards the product. And so it's actually, for me, it's really cool to hear that like you're still getting to work on the product and open source.
Yeah. Yeah. I still have to work on the business a lot too. Like the big picture planning and thinking about what are we going to build next year and why, but I was going to have to do that no matter what. So it's nice to feel like I can spend time on that now when I need to, without worrying that, oh, we're not getting any new Tailwind features out, or we're not getting new Tailwind UI components built, or whatever. So yeah, it's just been really great so far.
So I want to transition into more like technical things, and full transparency, this is maybe like the most selfish like request I've ever had to bring someone on, but I've been using a lot of Tailwind UI and also been using a lot of GitHub's view component for Rails. Mm. And I keep finding myself thinking, man, it'd be really cool if I could reuse this component in another project. Maybe I don't know the exact name for it, but it's like a list, right? It'd be really cool if I could just take this and use it between my two projects. And then I'm like, okay, great. I'm going to do this and it's going to be badass. I'm going to build my own like personal set of Tailwind UI components. And then I start on the first one and I'm like, well, what if I want to customize this class? Or like, what needs to be customizable across both projects? And I get locked up and I don't even finish one component. So this seems like a pretty relevant time also for you to talk about it, since y'all are also building like a headless UI library. So it's a very open-ended question, but I really just kind of want to start by hearing kind of how you approach just building components in Vue, React, whatever. Just, yeah, I'll give you the floor on that.
Yeah, sure. I think one thing that you have to be really careful of, especially with Tailwind as your sort of underlying system for styling things, is I try not to like let classes be like the customization API. If only because there's two main reasons. One is there's some technical challenges with it. So if you have like a button that has like a BG black by default, right? And you want to override that with BG green from the outside, there's no guarantees it's going to work, because if you have both those classes on the element, then which one is taking precedence depends on the CSS source order. There's no way to just override a class on an element by adding another class. You'd have to remove BG black and to add BG green, which people try to do this, and they get in this territory where they have a function that uses a regex to know which classes to strip out. And it's just scary, right? I think it also leads you down this hole of just wanting to do like too much with things and customize them in weird sort of ways. So I, for example, with a button, I'll always design like an API, an outward API for the button that maps to sets of classes internally. So I may have a size attribute or prop on the button that takes like an enumerated list of strings like SM, MD, or LG. And internally, I can switch on that and see, okay, well, if size is SM, then the size classes are going to be text SM, letting 5, font, medium, and those will get concatenated into the sort of class list that gets built up. Or I'll do the same thing for color. So rather than let you customize the background color and the text color, there'll just be like a color attribute. And I could say, this is a black button. This is a green button. This is an indigo button. And internally, the button will sort of know what font color to use, what background color to use, what hover color to use. And the list of classes will get just like sort of concatenated internally and then stuck into the template. So that's how like I sort of think about those things from a big picture level, is try and design my components with their own API and sort of treat Tailwind as like an implementation detail in a lot of ways. I will still sometimes expose like the ability to add classes to things, but you sort of have to have this implicit contract about what types of classes are allowed and what ones aren't. So for example, margin is usually a safe one to be able to add to any element, because generally you're not like baking a margin into a component. Like I made this mistake years ago when I was building stuff, and it always would bite me, is you'd make like a button class, like a Bootstrap button class, and you'd have like margin bottom 12 pixels on it, because typically I always wanted some space around the button. But you always regret that like immediately. It always feels like the margin below a button is really context dependent. It's like, I only want that margin there because there's this other thing after it. So that shouldn't be like baked in. So once you sort of build this habit of like never baking in like external changing properties into something, then it's always safe to tack those types of properties on. So usually I'm totally comfortable being able to do like a, accept like a margin, set of margin classes, but there's nothing like it technical that's preventing me from only adding those classes. So it's very implicit. And then sometimes I will design things in a way that let me override it with other stuff that's even more implicit. Say you're building like a button component. A lot of time that sort of stuff for me will be built out of multiple components. So I may have a button component that adds no color stuff. It just manages like the size. And then I might have a primary button component that is the button component, but with a bunch of color classes stuck on top of it. So in that case, I know that like it's safe for me to add stuff that's color related, but it's not safe for me to add stuff that's size related because that's going to conflict. So it's hard to like enforce in any sort of like type safe sort of way, you know what I mean? But you can sort of design things in a way where if you know that this type of decoration is safe and this type of decoration is not safe, well, then it's safe to accept classes like this, but not safe to accept classes like this. But it's sort of like, it feels like sort of like tightrope walking without a safety net. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can do it as long as everyone on the team sort of feels like we don't need training wheels and you can give us the sharp knives and it'll work out. But that's not always the case like for every team either, right? Especially bigger teams where you have a lot of people of differing sort of experience with different parts of the stack. So that would be like definitely like my biggest sort of principle, I guess, when it comes to trying to build components, reusable components with Tailwind. I think like the other thing is just really thinking about things in a way where you're sort of valuing like composition. You want to be able to build components out of other components. You want components to be able to accept components as children. I was looking at that Rails view component thing to see like how much of this sort of thing it would support. I saw that they have like slots as sort of like a experimental thing.
Yeah, but that's exactly what would allow you to do what you're talking about.
Yeah, and to me, that's like pretty foundational. Like you sort of need to be able to create components that are not just like solid filled in things. You need to be able to create things that are like the walls and you can just reuse the walls, but put the stuff inside them from the outside. Otherwise, you can find yourself being pretty limited for sure. So I'm trying to think of some good examples of where that would come up as a challenge in you know, using this library, if that's not like a pattern that's really fleshed out yet. But a lot of time you might have a table component. You want to be able to put anything you want in the table cells. So you don't want to have to just pass in like a JSON blob of data and have it fill stuff in. Like that's when you end up with these really inflexible components that are like, this is a, it's like an invoice table and that's all it can be. It can only ever show invoices because there's no way for me to change the column titles or for me to put in other stuff without just like passing in like a data structure, right? When you can pass stuff in as just like children, it gives you a lot more flexibility. Now you can have a button that you can pass an icon in by just like making the icon a child of the button rather than making it like an icon name that you pass in that the button then looks up internally and then injects the button icon. You know, like that's another pattern. So that also helps. It helps make things like more reusable because there's just less opinions sort of like hard coded into them. In like React and Vue, I find that the more like library-ish I want to make myself, like the more reusable I want to make it, the more I have to deviate from template-driven sort of components. You end up with components where you're conditionally rendering like totally different stuff based on what gets passed in. Like a pattern that we'll use in React or Vue a lot is just even seeing, okay, what was passed in as children and then cloning all those things and adding different things to them or inserting something in between them. Like you might have a list and you want to stick like borders in between each element. So you might have a list component and then inside of it, you pass 5 divs, but you want to add like a separator div between each of them, which controversial thing. Some people prefer to just stick a border on things, but other people like making these things like their own elements. The only way to really do that is to be able to look at that HTML that was passed in as a data structure and being able to say like items.flatmap return an array with the item and another div that has like just the border and flatten those all together to create like the new children. And that can give you some flexibility too. So I don't know. Is there any like other like maybe like specific situations that like you want to get into?
So the table's actually a good example to run with. So for me, like a thing I'm also worried about is that I'm going to go too far one way. Like I'm going to make components like that you can compose that I'm going to take it too far. And then I'm going to have like a table and a table header and a table row and a table cell. And should those all be components? I don't know. Is that a slippery slope?
I don't think it really is, because think about the markup that you're writing anyways. You're already writing like table, T head, TR, TH, 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 T body, TR, TH, 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 TD, TD, TD. You know, each element is sort of like a component in a sense right now. I think looking at the GitHub sort of view component thing, it is that would feel very heavy because of like how much you have to type for each component, unless there's like some terse version that I'm missing. But like having to do like render table cell dot new do table cell and then like the stuff, that's going to start to feel like, oh my God, am I really doing the right thing? But in like React or Vue, it doesn't feel as bad because you're just doing like table cell instead of like TD, or you're doing like, yeah, UI TD or some other prefix, so it doesn't conflict with like the HTML stuff. Yeah, it's tough, right? Because it sort of depends on what is natural and like the environment you're working in. And this topic kind of comes up when we talk to people about Tailwind's like add apply feature. In like a React app, you basically never really need to use it because you're just so used to like almost every element being a component. There's a lot of like really sophisticated React apps out there where people don't even, they almost don't author any vanilla HTML anymore. They've sort of built up this layer of primitives that, like the one that I always look at is like the Braid design system that like Mark Dalgleish works on. He's like a really smart guy from Australia who does lots of like design systems work. And they have like primitives for everything, or even like React Native Web, which is like what Nicholas Gallagher worked on Twitter, is like a way, I mean, even React Native itself, like you can think of it as an abstraction on top of HTML if you wanted to. There's like a text element instead of a P element and like a heading element instead of H1, H2, H3. You can imagine how you can build a whole app without ever writing div or span because everything is just one level of abstraction higher. But in like a Rails environment, that does not feel natural. Same with like in a server rendered Laravel environment or a WordPress environment or something. So in those situations, you're much more likely to want to create like a button class instead of a button component because it's just not idiomatic to be rendering a partial for every single thing on the whole page, right? Mm. So how that ties back to sort of our table conversation is tricky. Depends on what you want to do in the table, I guess, but I could see a world where you choose to write custom CSS to solve that problem instead of components if it feels like just a slog to ever use the component because of how verbose it sort of is and how it just feels like you're sort of doing something that's not really normal. Right. And that can be like, yeah, it's important to pay attention to those feelings, I think, too, and not just, because you can imagine like you build a Rails app that way and you hand it off to someone who's like a 10 years experienced Rails developer and they just look at it and they're like, what the fuck have you done? You know what I mean? Like,
I've already done
this
that.
This isn't what Rails apps look like. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a tough thing to find the right solution for the right environment.
That actually answers a ton of questions for me, really. Because, yeah, I hadn't even really considered how terse like it would be, or like how much you would have to write to like each one would be render some component dot new.
It's like, and yeah, 5 lines per TD instead of 1 or whatever.
Yeah. And that like that very much does not feel like the Rails way. And so that kind of helps give me context too of, okay, it is okay. Like I basically had to give myself rules. Like it is okay to use apply here. Well, I can just build custom classes.
Yeah. And I think that's totally fine to do. I think where components really become like powerful is for situations where you're trying to abstract something that would be multiple HTML elements. Because if something's like a button where all is one HTML element, then like creating a React component for that or creating a custom class for it Not really that much of a difference. If anything, like the custom class is probably better for performance because it's less JavaScript that you're sending to the client. It's less runtime transformation stuff that has to happen. And it works out fine because you're not missing any of the information that is in that component. But as soon as you have a component that like has a bunch of different pieces to it, there's more to it than just like a CSS class. So if you have like a card that has like a dot card class, then like a card title, and then a card body, and like a card footer, and all these other pieces, you have to repeat that HTML every time you use that card. Like the classic example, I think it was like the Bootstrap nav bar. No one on earth can build a Bootstrap nav bar without going to the Bootstrap site and copying the HTML for it too. It's not like the reusable aspects of it are not contained tidily in just the CSS. There's a very hyper-specific HTML structure that's necessary for it to work. And so just creating CSS classes to try and create some abstractions around that doesn't absolve you from needing to memorize this HTML structure or duplicate it every single time. Those are the situations where I feel like it's way more powerful to just be able to use a component because the component can abstract away the styles and like the markup structure together instead of just like the style portion of it. But when it's just one element, like a class for a link or a class for a button, I would see no problem at all with just doing that with CSS. And even in this table example, if this table one's interesting because this HTML structure of a table is so just known, you know what I mean? Like you already have to know that just to be like a web developer that there's a table and then T head and like a TR with TDs. That's not like cryptic knowledge that you have to go and copy and paste from some CSS framework website. That's just, yeah, tables are built this way and we've been building them for 20 years and we just know that TDs go in TRs and whatever. So if you have a class that's supposed to go on each one of those elements to sort of accomplish the styling that you need to accomplish, it's not as bad as the nav bar situation because it's sort of linked to an already established structure that everyone sort of memorized. But when it's like really bespoke stuff, I think is where it starts to feel like just using a class for this is not getting me all the way there. Like I still have to duplicate this HTML and try not to make a mistake there. And if I change how the HTML is supposed to be structured, I have to change it in every single spot now. I can't just go to the component and change it. So that's where like a partial or a component definitely is the way to go, I think.
That's awesome. That helps a ton. And I appreciate you taking the time to entertain those questions.
Yeah, no problem.
Real quick, before we go, I just want to ask, any bets on the new Hey technology that Basecamp's releasing?
I tried to like reverse engineer a bunch of it to sort of see what they were doing, but didn't discover anything super clear that jumped out. But my gut is that it's something to do with being able to do like partial updates of a page in like a turbo linksy way. I know they sort of talked about that a little bit for years. And I know DHH talked about, he was kind of going on about like HTTP 2 and all this stuff. And I'm not really sure like how that ties into it. So I'm definitely interested to see, although I'm not that excited about it either, honestly, because as much as I think like, I actually love Hey, the app a lot. My email life is so much better than it was before. I don't find the experience in terms of performance and stuff to be like, holy crap, I need to know how they're doing this. To me, it still feels a less responsive SPA, but I am still excited to see what they have come up with for sure.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of there. Like it's obviously something to do with TurboLinks and some kind of magical re-rendering thing, but I was just curious. So
it'll be interesting to see. I know some people like, I don't know if you've looked at like Livewire and like the Laravel ecosystem or like Phoenix Live View. I think there's probably some ideas that are going to be similar to that too, maybe. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we know. So we have a library like that in Rails called Stimulus Reflex, and it works over Action Cable. But like when people have asked DHH, is it going to be like Stimulus Reflex? He's like, no, it doesn't use Action Cable. And so like, it feels pretty obvious that it's going to be like a Livewire kind of thing. So
Yeah. Cool. Hopefully they talk about it one day. Cause I know DHH was supposed to give like a keynote about it at RailsConf. And now he's like hiding in the woods, I think, till after the election. So maybe we'll hear about it this year, but maybe not. I don't know.
That was kind of a buzzkill for Rails developers because it was like April, we're going to release the greatest thing in Rails that you've seen in a while. And then September, all right, I'll see everyone after November.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a ton for doing this. And thanks for all your work in Tailwind and Tailwind UI. It may sound like I'm blowing smoke, but it really does make our lives a lot better. Like I'm more confident to do like side projects because I know that they may like function like shit, but they won't look like shit. So
that's awesome. Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate that.
I actually had, when I was interviewing for the job I'm currently at, they had a ton of Tailwind questions.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've been writing Tailwind since 2017, maybe however long before that, for a long time. And I was able to ace those questions. And I was like, yes.
Nice.
So
I'm a fan. OG for sure. Because I think we released it on Halloween night 2017. So
I made a website in college when I graduated in 2018. So I know it was before the summer of 2018. And I shipped it with Tailwind.
That's awesome.
That was several pandemics ago.
Another life.
Adam, any links you want to plug? Any places people can find you?
Yeah, I mean, like you can always keep up with the work I'm doing on Twitter is probably the best place. Just Adam Wathen on Twitter. And anytime we do anything new and exciting with Tailwind, we always publish about it a bit on blog.tailwindcss.com. So those are the two spots to check out.
Awesome. Well, thanks again and good luck with everything. Hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.